And in this half hour of the program, we'll take a trip to Foss Mill, located in the northwest corner of Algonquin Park. Back in the 20s and 30s, loggers and their families journeyed to this bush-locked settlement, and we'll hear their story in just a couple of minutes, and whatever happened to the town of Foss Mill. Well, logging, of course, is the subject in this half hour, and we're talking about a place, again, as pure bush, and in just a few short years, it was transformed into a bustling beehive of a town. It was Foss Mill, located in the corner of Algonquin Park, but don't look on a map, it's not there anymore, because just as fast as it came, it disappeared. But the flame of Foss Mill has been rekindled by Paul and Doug Mackey, a father and son team. They've written a new book, The Foss Mill Story, Life in a Railway Lumbering Village on the Edge of Algonquin Park. And there's also a great video of a vintage 1930s film that goes along with it. And this morning, Son Paul is here in the Fresh Air studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thanks for being here. Now, if I took, let's start out with today. If I took a trip up north and looked for Foss Mill, what would I find?
Foss Mill is just bush growing back, a little bit of field where some cows graze, and there's some tracks where people go in with four-wheel drive vehicles to hunt and so on. Even the old CNR railway, the Algonquin route that it was positioned on, is now pulled up. The tracks have all been pulled up.
Well, let's compare that to the town back at its heyday. Now, describe what it was at its peak.
Well, it was the only town, per se, in Chisholm Township, which is a rural township. In 1924, they started building a big mill there. There had been a small mill previously, and the Facet Lumber Company from Quebec came and built a mill there. And eventually it had about 35 houses, 175 people living in the town itself, a company store. People in the community provided shoemaking services and haircutting services and midwife services. And they had the wealthy owners of the company, managers of the company, living on the far side of the railway tracks,
and the right
workers
side,
the workers living on the wrong side of the track, the other side of the track. And every winter, close to 400 people came in to log the bush. So you had this huge increase in population.
Now, what makes this community so fascinating to you, to some years compiling its story?
Well, I started out being interested in trains. It had a rickety old logging railway with an eccentric logging steam trains, and it had all the sort of romance of logging and lumbering. But as we began to interview, we interviewed over 50 people to do the book who had lived there, we began to get all these wonderful tales and stories of their lives and began to find out what life was like in the 20s and 30s for people, for the kids, for the women, for the workers in the mill and the bush. And that became fascinating. And I was also fascinated by the way that these people were sort of, they were in 1924, they were ripped from their homes in Facet, Quebec, which was a lovely little community on the Ottawa River between Montreal and Ottawa. And their mill closes down there. They're ripped and put down into this place in the middle of nowhere near Algonquin Park, and they have to build a community. They have to make connections with the people in Chisholm and the local community, and they have to, most of them were French Canadians, so they're coming into a more of an English Protestant community, and they had to create and build this little community and keep it alive.
It is interesting when you think about the community. I mean, we even here on Fresh Air, we've done a few items on life of loggers and in the bush and at the camps. But I haven't heard, or I personally don't know that much about what life was like actually in these small little towns for not so much the men, but for the women and for the teachers and professionals that came in. Tell me a little bit about day-to-day life, say for the women then.
The men were working in the mills, and so the women had large numbers of kids they had to take care of, and they had to produce, they had gardens, they had animals to take care of. They had all the kids and the clothes. They were making. They didn't have a lot of money. People got paid, $30 a month back then. So they had to make their own clothes and do the cooking. And the men often were gone for long of time, like 10 hours a day. But some of the men, when they were working in the bush or the people who worked on the railway, were sometimes gone almost the whole days if there was bad weather, and so on. So it was a hard life. But also, people seem, up until the disasters hit and the depression and so on, people seem to have a pretty comfortable, happy life.
You sound like you're looking at it a little bit romantically. Sounds like you might enjoy living in Foss Mill in its heyday?
Well, in some ways, there were problems. In the sense that they were so isolated, and shopping, they had to shop at the company store, and prices were a little higher at the company store. People built their own houses, but even because they were on company land, they actually didn't own the house and actually paid rent for the houses they'd actually built themselves. And there was an intense problem. Foss Mill was famous for its black flies, breeding black flies. So some of the seasons were very hard. And winters, extremely hard in the winter. People told the stories of their house creaking at night from the cold, and the linoleum being sort of curled up in the morning, and having to go out to the outhouse at night in the winter was not a fun experience. And they lived very much in sort of shacks, uninsulated shacks. They called it, one of the people interviewed said, we lived in shacks. They were
nothing more.
You know, some of the rooms were only, often, some of the houses, the rooms were actually divided only with curtains into the different rooms.
And it was a boom town, so it was built very quickly.
Built very quickly, no foundations. They really didn't build it to last more than 10 or 15 years. That's how long the woods manager had predicted the wood would last, and back then, people didn't operate on a sustainable basis. They went in, you stripped an area, and you moved on. So ultimately, it was destined to end, which is an interesting lesson, I suppose, of the whole story.
Well, let's talk about the end. What happened to Foss Mill?
Well, Foss Mill, when the Depression hit, lumber sales went way down, and the company had overextended itself in terms of cutting huge amounts of lumber that they couldn't sell. So during the early 1930s, they were closing the mill down constantly. They were only hiring 50 people or 150 people instead of 400 people in the bush. And then in 1934, and one of the mysteries of the book is really exactly what happened, but the mill burnt down in 1934, and the people were basically left in the middle of the Depression on relief, back in the middle of nowhere in the bush, and had to survive on relief on $5 a month for a family living there. Now, they did have their own gardens, and they had very, so they survived, but it was a very hard time. And the workers ended up going to Kiosk down the road.
Down the road a bit.
Down the train track.
Mm-hmm.
But because there were houses in Foss Mill, the company didn't deem necessary to really build a community at Kiosk at that point. So the men were going and living in the boarding house in Kiosk, and the women and children were left alone in Foss Mill. So during the week, for 6 days a week, there were no men in Foss Mill. From 1936 up into the late 40s, it was a slow process of families eventually building houses and moving to the town of Kiosk, and Foss Mill went through this decline.
Now, along with the book, there's a promotional, I guess we would call it a video now, but back it was a promotional film made in the 30s about the mill and about the process of lumbering. It's a real snapshot and a coup to find. Where did you find this film?
Well, the film was, I mean, that was a fantastic discovery. We'd interviewed one of the women, and she said that she remembered this film made, and we thought, no chance it's going to be around, but we sort of kept it in the back of our minds that this film had been made. And we went to interview Donald Staniforth, who was the son of Sidney Staniforth, one of the owners of the company, and in that interview we mentioned about this film that had been made, and he said, says I have that film. And it just about fell out of our chairs, and he offered it to us, and he said he hadn't seen it in quite some time because it's old film and he didn't have the equipment and so on. So we sent it to my brother.
It was just in his basement?
In his basement, yeah.
Just sitting there?
Just sitting there in two metal reels. And so he sent it to my brother, who's a filmmaker in Kingston, and he called me up and he said, this stuff's fantastic. This is made by a professional filmmaker. This is not sort of amateur, shaky stuff. This is good quality film done by professionals. And there's like 20 minutes of, and it really shows what happens to a tree when it's cut down in Algonquin Park, and how it goes through the process of being cut, going on the train, all these wonderful scenes of these of the trains puffing smoke in the snow and so on. It's all filmed in the winter. Going to the mill, all through the mill, shows it being cut up with these beautiful wide, 20 inch wide planks, going through the mill. And then being piled and air drying for a year, and then being shipped off on the railway. So you sort of get the whole tale of how a tree becomes a piece of lumber in this 20 minutes.
And quickly, you're working on another book obviously. I can imagine how many cans or can of worms you opened up with your first research on Foss Mill. And you're doing a book on Kiosk, the logging mill that was built outside of Foss Mill after the big fire. And you're looking for stories and photos?
We're looking for stories. We're actually working with the reunion committee of the people of Kiosk. Kiosk also no longer exists, but they have regular reunions. And we're working with that reunion committee to retell this story. And it's a fascinating story because of the changes in logging practices and the women entering the mill and unions. And again, they had another fire. And built quite a community, really the biggest community that ever existed inside of Algonquin Park. So we're going to reconstruct that story as well, and we would love to hear from people, photographs, stories about Kiosk, who worked at Kiosk, who know people who worked at Kiosk, and they can definitely call us about that too, and hopefully will be out in a year or so.
The number is 416-925-8412 for the Foss Mill story, or if you are maybe a sage on Kiosk. Well, Paul, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Paul Mackey and his father, Doug, are the authors of The Foss Mill Story, Life in a Railway Lumbering Village on the Edge of Algonquin Park, and have revived the old film Logging by Rail in Algonquin Park. Both are available through Past Forward Heritage Limited.